What happens when Foxconn replaces jobs with robots? A new Xbox is coming, and it might rival your Chromecast, your Roku, or your Apple TV. And we talked to Roberto Baldwin from Engadget about what it's like to drive in a self-driving car that was made by an iPhone hacker. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1521, recorded Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
Hi, this is Tech News Today, the show where we talk about technology news. We put it in a blender, we blend it up, drink it through a straw, rent it at the video store. We do all the tech news things on Tech News Today.
Yes.
I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. How many cups do you get if you throw all the tech news in a blender? Like, either three,
today
4 cups?
About 6.5 cups.
Okay, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's plenty.
And it's going to taste delicious.
Yes. We're going to carb load. I don't know if tech news constitutes carbs.
No.
It's open to interpretation.
This is carbohydrate-free tech news today.
So you lucked out this time. So let's talk about a few news items and not blenders. First of all, a government official in China says that Foxconn, that's the factory used most notably, I would say, here in the U.S. By Apple as its hardware manufacturing supplier, has reduced its workforce more than 50%, from 110,000 employees to 50,000 employees, to reduce labor costs. In lieu of human workers, they've employed robotics, of course, and they aren't alone in their efforts. Up to 600 other major companies in the Kunshan region also plan to replace their human workers, at least partially, with robots. The robot uprising is taking a whole lot of jobs. This isn't a very large area. I mean, for China, 2.5 million in Kunshan as of 2014 sounds like a lot of people. In the grand scheme of China, that's pretty small. So this is kind of crazy and very indicative of kind of the movement happening in the technology kind of hardware world as we see it right now.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about this because I don't want to go so far as like, oh, the robots are taking our jobs, because I don't think it's a one-to-one exchange necessarily. Mm-hmm. And this is a point where I wish I were an economist, because I sort of make these claims that I have nothing to back up them. What the BBC says, Foxconn also said that robots allow human workers to spend more time focusing on higher value added elements in the manufacturing process, like research and development and quality control. Mm-hmm. Like, those sound like a lot better jobs than what we normally hear from Foxconn, which is dangerous, like soul crushing jobs. I mean,
yeah.
Horrible. They have nets, at the bottom because people are committing suicide. So it's like, maybe they get better jobs. I talked to Mike Murphy, who also wrote about this in Quartz. And he said he reached out to Foxconn to say, is that really true? Mm-hmm. are these people that are being replaced by robots? This is an old story that he pointed me to of his. And he said he doesn't believe that it's true. He has no sources. He said Foxconn did not reply to his, when he reached out, he didn't hear back from them.
He doesn't believe it's true that they are replacing the employees with
He doesn't believe that these people being replaced are getting higher valued jobs necessarily, as Foxconn told the BBC.
If it's a poison environment, they're still working in the poison environment. They're just doing different duties potentially.
Or they're not working.
Or they're not. Yeah. And when you're talking about that many employees, like 110,000, more than half cut to 50,000, like, that's a lot of employees to be just not let go and to be shuffled over into what would seem to be kind of like a higher level job overseeing something, as opposed to doing manual labor, which I imagine is, costs a lot less for a company like Foxconn. So, yeah, I kind of don't believe that either. I think somewhat it's spin for the company. labor costs have been a huge issue in China. Labor costs have been, have quadrupled since 2006. And, you know, robotics are one of those ways where, you know, you get rid of the labor costs. There's the upfront cost of the robotics themselves. But, man, over time, it really just kind of ends up paying for itself based on all the money that you aren't spending on humans.
Right.
Because humans are needy.
Well, yes. I also think, like, and if there's any economists listening to this, please email me at
megan@twit.tv.
Because also there's the argument that could be made that, okay, so then cell phones, so the labor costs are better, like they save money on labor. Maybe they can sell phones for less. Maybe more people
right.
can afford phones. Maybe you can afford a phone and that phone lets you get a better job than working in a Foxconn factory.
But these employees, or are you talking about the Western?
I think a lot of that ends up hitting us. No, I'm talking about these employees.
Yeah,
like I'm
maybe,
talking about people there.
But I don't think they're making enough money for that.
Well, I mean, not necessarily, but if the phones are cheaper, I'm not talking about one-to-one people. I mean, that's
right.
the thing. When you make the argument about these horrible, you know, these horrible jobs in countries which are horrible, but they might be better than no job, you know? So that,
sure.
that's the thing. Then you have a horrible job that raises the standard of living in these places so that it can, you know, it can all rise up. Like, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to say that it's, you know, it's great that children are working in factories, but sometimes that's where it has to start. That's where I get into this. Like, I'm going to say something that's maybe not true because I don't exactly know what I'm talking about, but
it's
I do that.
It
is complicated, but I don't think we can say like the robots are stealing our jobs and it's all horrible.
Well, and I mean, you know, very, very recently, McDonald's CEO Ed Renzi had said something about, you know, the raising of the minimum wage might push them, you know, fast food industry, let's say, towards robotics as replacements for people because shoveling, you know, shoveling French fries is not something that you absolutely need a human being to do. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's a sticky thing to even start talking about because I think it's way more complicated, especially when you get into the fact that this is happening in a country like China that has just such a complicated financial kind of reality, you know, as opposed to just kind of the simpler aspect of the U.S.
Right. And when someone says, like shoveling French fries, you don't need a human to do. Where does that end? Like, what do you
right.
need
well,
a human
exactly,
to do?
Right. Well, and exactly, right. I guess everybody's overseeing the robot that's shoveling French fries.
Yeah.
We'll just shuffle them into a management role. Robot management is what they'll go into.
All right, let's move on. Last week we told you that Microsoft was quitting the feature phone business. Hot on the heels of that news is that Microsoft is laying off nearly 2,000 smartphone hardware employees, mostly in the company's mobile division in Finland. In a blog post today, Microsoft also says they are writing off $950 million $200 million of which will go to severance. In an email to employees obtained by Ars Technica, Terry Myerson says they plan to focus on new devices, which could mean that rumored Surface phone that we've been hearing about.
Well, I would love to see a Surface phone to see if that could kind of, I don't know, change the dialogue around Windows Phone a little bit. And man, you know, Ballmer once said Microsoft's acquisition of Nokia's devices and services was a bold step into the future, a win-win for employees, shareholders, and consumers of both companies. And my, how fast things change.
Yeah.
You know, Windows Phone was in a pretty bad state when that happened to begin with, when the acquisition took place. You know, not a whole lot has changed since then. I don't think it's necessarily the hardware that's to blame. At least right now, their current problem, it's not a hardware problem. It's software and support problem. And they got to figure that out. So even a Surface phone, great. That's great hardware. But, you know, Microsoft really has a lot to figure out on the software side of things.
Yeah, yeah. So Myerson says, yeah, we're scaling back, but we're not out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he says. So.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, it's we'll sad. I mean, that
I don't
is
know how much,
sad. That's a
much lower it can go.
Yeah.
There we go. E3 is right around the corner. That's June 12th, to be exact, if you want to put it on your calendar. Microsoft plans to show off some interesting new gaming hardware, according to sources. First, The Verge has sources that say to expect a few streaming devices at E3, similar in scope to Google's Chromecast, with a micro console that offers that, but also bringing, you know, apps and games from the Windows Store all kind of bundled into that device. And then Kotaku actually has some differing rumors, so maybe all this stuff is happening. They have sources pointing to new Xbox consoles, one being a smaller and cheaper model that should be shown at E3, and the other, which might not even be revealed at E3 at all, but it's codenamed Scorpio, set for a 2017 release, and it would be a spruced up Xbox One with a, you know, an improved GPU and support for the Oculus Rift headset, which wouldn't be too surprising considering the fact that the Oculus Rift ships with an Xbox One controller. So Microsoft and Oculus are kind of, they're chummy.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I listened and watched Brad Sam's podcast. Brad has come on this show to be a guest a few times. He was on Windows Weekly today also. He has some of the scoop. He says his sources say it's going to be something like an Xbox Mini, like you said, mm-hmm. Which will be around $100. That's what he has heard. Mm. And then the bigger device, which he says will be a little bit smaller than a large lunchbox.
Okay.
So if you can imagine that, it'll be between $150 to $175, and will be similar to the Apple TV.
Will it have a graphic imprint of the movie Annie on it? Because I have one of those at home.
You did not have an Annie lunchbox,
I don't.
Did you?
No, I do now. Yes.
What did your lunchbox have when you were growing up?
I think I had a Star Wars lunchbox. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty positive I had a Star Wars one.
I had peanuts.
Yeah, see, so obviously we figured out what Microsoft needs to do with Xbox.
Yeah.
They need to go down this marketing rabbit hole of calling it the Xbox Lunchbox.
Lunchbox.
The X Lunchbox.
Xbox Lunchbox. I love it. Anyway. Do it.
Don't take advice from us. We'll bankrupt you faster than Nokia.
You know who could do our jobs better? Robots. Here's an update to the story we talked about yesterday regarding changes to Twitter. Now, I said I was tired about talking about Twitter yesterday. I'm kind of still tired about talking about Twitter. They say you'll be able to reply to up to 50 people without counting towards your character count. I was very confused by that. But now I think I remembered it because I think I got my mind wrapped around what that means. So, you know, if you reply to a tweet and then someone else replies to you, so then it's like three at replies.
It's like
people
you're collecting
just,
them like
right, like they're like
Pokemon.
CCs sort of. So you can have up to 50. So it makes a little sense to me. Engadget confirms that your replies will not be broadcast to your feed. We were wondering about that yesterday. Apparently, they will not. So if I reply to someone, it's not just going to be on my feed.
I'm happy to hear that. I mean, it's going to be broadcast, but still by the same old rules, which is you would only see my at reply to someone else if you were following both me and the person that I'm replying to, let's say.
Right.
So, and that's... That's fine. That's what we're
but it's this weird thing where, like, if I, in the past, if I wanted to say, like, at Jason Howell is my best friend on Twitter, like, it wouldn't go to everyone before.
Right.
Because I started it with at Jason Howell.
Right. It would only go to someone that was following you and me.
Right. Exactly. Yep. But now it'll go to everyone. And if I only wanted...
What you're saying is now it does go to everyone?
If you start with at Jason Howell.
Yeah.
So you're not, if you start a tweet, not a reply... But if I just wanted to tell everyone that...
Oh, man. See, this is the problem.
It's
like,
so complicated.
We are ardent users of Twitter, right? And Twitter has a big issue right now of getting new users, which means making its service obvious to people to a point to where they aren't intimidated by kind of jumping into the pool. And if we are getting this confused over this kind of stuff, what hope is there for user?
There's no hope for Twitter. Just kidding. But if you think about it, that was a weird thing that we got used to, right?
Yeah.
Like you had to put a dot. Like if I wanted everyone to know that you were my best friend, I would have to put dot at Jason Howell, you are my best friend. And it was more than likely people would use that to insult other people. Like I don't want to just reply to you. I want to tell everyone something horrible and have everyone
see
it.
Yeah, that's true.
So
saw a lot of that.
So there's some more Twitter news. Alex Kantrowitz at BuzzFeed says his sources say that Twitter is disbanding its commerce team and they've stopped development on the Twitter buy button. The buy button was a project that began under former CEO Dick Costolo, but it will reportedly not continue. They are going to focus more on dynamic ads, which I think is interesting. The dynamic ads are the ones that are based on your browsing activity, those ones that are creepy and weird, but work apparently. I thought this was fascinating because it just says like that that Twitter is really focused on things that are working now. They're not like, oh, maybe a buy button will work in 2 or 3 years. But they're not trying that stuff. They want to figure out what's working now. That's kind of desperate days for
good.
Them.
Well, they need that kind of focus, obviously. I'm not really sure. I mean, do you buy very much stuff from social media just in general? Not Twitter, but like anything social media? Like, I just, that's not an experience that I have. Seeing something and using kind of the social media architecture to make a purchase of something.
Like if you tweeted about something and there was a buy button and I wanted to buy it too?
Yeah, like I never even see that kind of stuff. No. So I'm not surprised at all, at least as far as Twitter is concerned. I feel like I see it maybe sometimes, you know, a little bit more of that kind of stuff in an environment like Facebook. Maybe it makes a little bit more sense. But in Twitter,
Pinterest,
man, it's lost on me there.
Yeah. I think it is. I think that ads work much better. I don't think we want to be convinced to buy things by social media. Like, I think it's we're more likely to buy things that they, it's like almost like they, the computers know more about what we want to buy than our friends do.
They know us better than we do.
Yeah.
Even
so, robots nowadays would also be better friends, apparently.
Yeah.
If you want to buy more things.
The best ad is the ad that applies directly to you.
Yes.
My personal experience is that most of the time ads just don't. Even when they're trying to be smart, it doesn't feel like it applies to me enough. But
well, when the dynamic ads do, right? You looked at something, you didn't buy it, and then it
yeah, totally,
keeps appearing.
And it really kind of pulls from that.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
And,
that's
and
what
that
I think
for sure.
Talking about. Right.
But yeah, then there's the whole action aspect of it. And I guess that's where it's lost on me.
And Web 6030 makes a good point that we might have brought up yesterday. There's no edit button. You brought that. I don't know if you talked about that yesterday.
No,
there's still no way to edit tweets.
That's a feature that I would love to see in Twitter. But again, it's one of those things that kind of alters the core of what kind of makes Twitter an interesting thing to follow when you're following brands or you're following people or whatever, which is that sometimes people say the wrong thing. And Twitter allows you to kind of hold them accountable for that because there is no edit button or whatever. So, but at the same time, I put out plenty of tweets where, like, you know, I misspelled there or whatever. And I have to like copy it, delete it, do a new post and start over, whatever. It's just annoying. Xiaomi, the Chinese consumer electronics brand that's known for its high performance, low cost smartphone hardware, has branched out in a number of ways to differentiate their offerings over the last year, I'd say. Today, they announced not one, but two drone models. The 4K Mi drone is a quadcopter with an attached 4K camera, and a remote that allows for the connection of a Mi smartphone onto the top of the remote and acts as the viewfinder. I love that. They're also releasing a 1080p Mi drone with HD camera capability. The 1080p model will be crowdfunded starting May 26th on the Mi Home app with an open beta beginning in July. You know, I'm no quadcopter professional. We would need to get the quad father in here to pick this apart from that perspective. But I think this looks really nice. And from what I can tell, the cost on this, which is essentially, it's the 4K version sells for, when you convert ¥29.99 to American dollars, it's around $460. I think the comparison is somewhere in the grand, you know, $1,000 territory. So this is a pretty stellar piece of kit for like half the cost of what you would normally spend on this sort of thing.
And would you be able to buy it here?
So Xiaomi does have the Mi store that you can buy their hardware in the U.S. It's their phones that they keep out of the U.S. Mainly right now, and I'm sure some of their other hardware, but some of it you do have to go kind of, you know, on the internet and go to an international store, and there are ways to get it, but they do service the U.S. with some of their hardware. I couldn't tell whether this was going to be brought to the U.S. store or not, but 27 minutes of flight, so it actually stays up there pretty, I mean, that's a pretty sizable chunk of time with a 5100 milliamp hour battery. The camera sits on a three-axis gimbal, so that makes really stable video that's recorded with it, and it has like a geofencing option so that it can limit the movement and all of these autonomous flight modes. I don't know. I'm like borderline, like, man, maybe I want to get in on the drone thing because this thing looks pretty sick. I love it.
All right.
I'm a fan. Okay. All right. I'll stop talking about it now. Up next, would you ride shotgun with famed iPhone hacker GeoHots? What if I told you he wasn't driving, but his DIY self-driving kit was? You might change your mind. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. If you are hiring, you need help. Did you know, of all the places that you can post your job to find the best candidates on the internet? There are tons of them. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the top job sites. And that can be a bit of a challenge because there are so many of them. But with ZipRecruiter, you can do it easily. Posting jobs in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. You don't want to leave it up to chance. This is your business that you're talking about. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100 job boards, including social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, all of them with a single click. You just post one time, and then you'll watch the candidates kind of roll into the ZipRecruiter interface. Super easy to use. Very thorough. ZipRecruiter offers optimized pages also that look great on any screen. So it just makes it a little more manageable based on the size of the screen that you're using. You can add their unique mobile apply process for even more visitors and applicants. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. This is the internet we're talking about. So they're all over the place. It makes it harder to find normally. ZipRecruiter makes it easier, thankfully. No more juggling emails, no more calls to your office. You can actually add multiple users to your account to help manage the process. Quickly screen candidates with real-world questions using free-form, multiple choice, or yes-no formats. So you can kind of trim it down to the right folks. View candidate responses in conjunction with their beautifully formatted resumes. Rate them and hire the right person fast. That right there is what it's all about. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 800,000 businesses. More than 100 million candidate applications have been delivered. So you can check it out right now. You can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT to get started and see what they got. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today.
A few days ago, I was scrolling through the Twitters when I came upon a tweet by Roberto Baldwin from Engadget that said he was broadcasting live from his drive with notorious iPhone hacker George Hotz in his new self-driving car. I tuned in, and then I had to tune out because I was too frightened that something horrible was going to happen. Joining us to talk about his experience is Roberto Baldwin from Engadget. Welcome, Roberto.
Thanks for having me on.
Still alive. You're still
good.
Alive.
You're worried.
And of course, he could always take the wheel, so it wasn't that dangerous. So George Hotz, also known as GeoHot, he's a well-known iPhone hacker. And back in December, Hotz popped up back up in the news after a profile on Bloomberg. He claimed to be developing new self-driving car technology, and he planned to take on Tesla. So tell us about your drive.
It was impressive, especially when it's being run off a single camera and radar. That's everything running the car. It's a trained AI that they've been training by driving the car around as opposed to hand coding. Like, this is a car, this is a boat, this is, a child. It learns from somebody driving it. So if you're a good driver, they've been teaching it to drive by being good drivers. So it was impressive, but at the same time, it was a little bit uneventful, which is kind of what you want. They're semi-autonomous or autonomous. I mean, there was one time where the car didn't stop as quickly as we liked while coming up on a stopped vehicle, but he's right there. He just put the brakes on, and it was a split second of like, oh, which if you've ever driven in a car with someone who's a bad driver, I mean, that split second just keeps going and going and going the entire drive. George is he's a colorful character. He's very smart. And he's a really fun interview, and he's when you're around him, it's kind of infectious, his sort of excitement at what he's doing and what's going on. And plus, as you see here, there was this giant red button in case the computer just lost its mind. it was just a giant safety where you just smash it and then you're good to go.
So did you find yourself putting your foot on the imaginary brake in the passenger seat?
No, not really. The car, the follow distance between the comma car and the car in front of us far larger than, most of my friends when they're driving. It wasn't tailgating. It wasn't doing anything sort of out of the ordinary. It wasn't sort of like veering into traffic. They're trying to make it a far safer vehicle than you or I.
So, Obviously, Google has a ginormous team working on this, as do other companies. Tesla has devoted a lot of time to this.
Uber.
Supposedly, Apple, Uber. They all have these teams. They're all gigantic companies with more money definitely more money than Geohot. How could a small company like Comma compete in this space? I know there are limitations to Comma's version of the technology that's shown here. How do they compete? Or do they need to? Maybe they're just a different sector.
Google's idea. You know what Google wants to do is they're gonna partner with someone in the future, and they seem like more they would rather just have an autonomous car, like full autonomy. Mm-hmm. Tesla, you know, they're selling cars. They have the autonomous features. You know, they have the autopilot feature. It also does lane. You know, you change lanes with it, it'll see signs. Even though George said those were sort of gimmicky, he did talk about like those will probably be in later versions of the software. It's weird. It's kind of, we had these, let's say Apple and the iPod. Apple made computers forever. Sony owned the music industry. It owned everything. You know, you had the Walkman. They had all these different things. And then Apple just sort of came along with the iPod. I think he's thinking with his crew of 6 to eventually 20 employees, he can do the same thing. And he wants to sell this to everybody. He doesn't think that people should have to buy a Tesla to get, semi-autonomous features on their car. He doesn't think we should have to wait until we get a full autonomous car. I'm very impressed with what they've done since he started back in September. From September to now, I'm sitting in a car and he just pushes a button and we're just like, hands off, let's go and see what happens.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, if he's done it this quickly, it'll be interesting to see what happens by the end of the year when they're supposed to sell a piece of hardware you can just attached to your vehicle.
I mean, if it was done this quickly, it makes me kind of, at least in my head, and maybe this is an incorrect assumption to jump to, but it makes me reevaluate how challenging it must be to pull something like this off. I mean, that's an incredible turnaround time. Now, there were technical disadvantages to Comma's implementation. Explain those a little bit.
So, it's learning by driving. So it doesn't, they're not hard coding, they're not telling it like this is a car. They're not the sort of deep learning where you're like, you're coding and this is a car. This is the type of lane. This is the type of this. This is a type, mm-hmm. It's doing it by them as they drive around. It learns how to drive, which is why they're releasing the Shiffer app, which is an app that we can all, you put on the front of your car, you have it look out the windshield. Well, not in the front of the car, in the windshield. That would be ridiculous. Put your smartphone on the front. But you attach your smartphone to the windshield. It sees outside, and then you just drive. And while you're driving, it's collecting data. It doubles as a dash cam, so you can, if you get an accident or whatever. And it's going to feed all that information anonymously to Comma, who are going to use that information to help train their AI. And they're getting all the information, and they're setting it up against basically a very safe driver data set.
Okay, so let's talk about the Shiffer app, which is originally called Chauffeur, and then you say that he realized people don't know how to spell Chauffeur, so they changed it to Shiffer, C-H-F-F-R, which is Chauffeur with no vowels?
I think, yeah.
Yeah.
He had Shiffer like in a PowerPoint deck, and I was looking at it and typing. He's like, don't type it out. Don't.
Yeah.
You'll know why. And then he like explained that we're making it Shiffer.
So yeah, it's one of these things where it's like I don't know. I mean, I think Elon Musk is a little bit. He comes out with some crazy things, but I don't know. Like if he's not exactly inspiring confidence in me. George Hotz isn't. But so what you're saying with the Shiffer app, we're like it's just going to be like I would download it just to help out, just for my own edification.
Yeah, it's he's putting it out there for people to help. The future of autonomous driving. At the base of this, he's very interested in AI, and AI is sort of the basis of all the autonomous driving. So AI is like really the core of what he's really interested in. But the best implementation of that in the real world is actually autonomous driving right now. So the idea is that we're all going to be using his app And we can use it either, you know, you want to be this great person who wants to help out AI, wants to help out autonomous driving, or you just want, you know, a dash cam app that you can, you know, go through and look at all your routes. And, you know, as you click on a route, it'll show you a picture of where you were. So, and then as you're using it, you get these points. And then he wouldn't tell me what the points actually do, but he said if you're at the top of the leaderboard, you'll be happy. So I don't know. I guess if you're in the top five, you get a free, you know, comma hardware box when it comes out at the end of the year, or maybe he comes to your house and gives you a hug, or, you know, you can never tell with George. He's a wacky guy. And I do understand that, sort of like, well, he seems a little rambunctious for someone I should be trusting my life with. Right. But at the same time, he's like this sort of rambunctious, but really, really smart. It's you kind of have to, like, you know, you're gonna have to weigh that and see how that works out for you when you're making a purchase.
Well, he sort of reminds me a little bit of Kevin Rose, who's now like a mature, successful person. But back in my day when we were at Tech TV, like, he was just a young hacker, and that's who he reminds me of. And I wouldn't trust him with my life either back then.
Maybe now, but.
So can I download the Shiffer app now?
Now, the Shiffer app won't be available until the end of June, and it's only going to be available on a couple Android phones. It's on Engadget.com. It'll tell you which ones. And then they're also working on making an Android app. Half of their respondents, people who signed up for the beta, wanted, you know, an iPhone app. So they're going to have that. So, yeah, it's you know, if – and I'm sure there are going to be a ton of people who are going to want the app, who are going to want it for either – I think most people are going to want to be part of something that they think is the future of driving, which, you know, actually is, mm-hmm. and helping this sort of underdog out. I mean, I can't afford a Model S. I don't want to wait for a Model 3. And if you get a Model 3, you still have to add all those autonomous features onto it. So if you could get, you know, most of those features for less than $1,000 on your car for traffic, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this whole aftermarket aspect of self-driving, we've talked about a couple of weeks ago, the kit, the name escapes me right now, but for, you know, big rigs, and, you know, that company is all dedicated to aftermarket for installing into the vehicle you already have, as opposed to needing to, you know, pony up the big dollars to buy a brand new one. So it looks like this is going to be an interesting kind of submarket to what we've all been talking about. This is kind of slipping in underneath. One of the limitations that I thought was interesting from your video was that as he was coming up to a stop at a stoplight where there was no car in front of him, he basically said, well, I have to take over, because the way the technology works right now, it's based off of the vehicle that's in front of you. So that sounds like something they need to figure out. or maybe this is a kit that's really just mainly useful for something like highway or freeway driving, where you're just always on a straightaway and you're not interacting with lots of stop and go and turns and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're sort of, the main focus is driving on the freeway. That in-town driving, that was the person who implemented that, Ricardo, he started on that a month ago. He started at comma a month ago, and between then and now, he made it so you could drive, you know, autonomously in town. So it doesn't have, you know, doesn't have the sort of stoplights and stuff. And on one hand, I kind of want people to still be my concern still with all of this is that as you take more and more responsibility away from people while they're driving, they start doing more and more of this.
They check out. Yep.
They're doing this, they're not checking. And then as they're checking out, I feel like there's more of an issue with accidents. Now, I don't know if accidents will go up, if they'll go down. I mean, that's, we'll have to see what.
Maybe they'll offset.
They offset. You know, it's and that's where the sort of weirdness is right now when we're talking about, like, autopilot, yeah. And, you know, and commas, that, you know, where, what does the driver do during all this? Do you just sort of relax and just keep an eye on what's going on? Or, you know, that sort of waiting till we get to level four is going to be an interesting time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely interesting. And I mean, that's why I respect Google just getting all of this data before any people are on the road using it, as opposed to Tesla, who, I mean, they've really been putting these, you know, things in cars And I mean, nothing horrible has happened yet.
Thankfully. Let's see what'll happen when we do this and roll it out to everybody as a beta.
Yeah. So the lines, I mean, there were other issues with like the lines on the road, right? I mean, Vegas does it differently. Your ride was in Vegas and then other places, and he had to really scramble at the last minute to fix that. I mean, how much do lane markings have to do with this, with self-driving technology?
They actually have quite a lot. A lot of car, like BMW and Audi, they have these lane tracking capabilities. So it basically just keeps you in your lane. And if you're getting towards the edge, it'll adjust the wheel a little bit, or some of them will, you know, an alarm will go off. You know, there's sort of like stay in your lane systems. So with this one, it's actually watching the lane, it's looking at the, you know, those dots, which, you know, in where they were testing it here in California originally, you know, we use paint on our roads, and Nevada's like, we can just put these dots down. But he drove it around in the morning. He told me that he drove around in the morning and learned. And that's one of the reasons why they're putting out this app. So you can, you know, people can drive around in all these different parts of the United States or around the world, and the system will start learning. It's, you know, it'll just start taking in this data, like what kind of lanes are in, you know, in Colorado, or what kind of, you know, intersections are in Detroit or whatever. It's going to start taking all this information in. They can get that information, put it against this like smarter driver data set, and then push it back out to all the systems. So it's, you know, it's really doing what Tesla's already doing right now with their autopilot stuff and with their cars, is where they're collecting all this data from everyone who owns a Tesla, dropping it into their AI, dropping it into their system, and then pushing it out to their driver. So they're pretty much doing the same thing on, you know, at the high level. It's just that for Comma, you know, they're really letting it's more about teaching the car by actually doing it as opposed to coding.
Well, Roberto, thank you so much for joining us. Roberto Baldwin is at Engadget. He's on Twitter at Strange Ways. That's Strange Ways with no vowels, like chauffeur. With
so. If they took it from me, I should get some sort of cut.
You really should.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Roberto.
For having me.
Take care.
All right. Have a good night.
I feel like I threw some shade on Kevin Rose, and I wanted to say that he is an old friend, and I totally respect everything that he's done, and I was just joking.
You wouldn't have trusted him then. You would now.
I would now trust him with my life.
There we
go. Is that what you wanted to hear? So last week you were at Google I.O., and I was busy trying to get to the bottom of the millennial phenomenon of peer-to-peer mobile payments. I interviewed Carrie Paul from Quartz about her piece entitled "Venmo is Turning Our Friends into Petty Jerks." We got a voicemail about that topic from Patrick, so let's listen to that.
Hey, TNT News. This is Patrick from Texas, and when I was a cashier, I can't tell you how many times I had people fighting over money. Venmo would have changed their relationship so much. Probably would have made it worse, because they would fight over who's going to pay. I'm going to pay. No, I'm going to pay. No, I'm going to pay. No, I'm going to pay. And before you know it, they're like one's trying to like sneak a 20 into the pants of another person, or they're trying to slip each other, or both of them hold out the money at the same time. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. So Venmo, I could imagine a lot of people like forcing to pay Venmo from themselves, like charging themselves. I don't know, weird stuff. So just wanted to share a hopefully funny story. So catch you guys later. Bye.
Thank you for the voicemail. I love voicemails.
I do
voicemails,
love voicemails,
video mails. They're just way more dynamic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I read through the article, and I haven't personally really used Venmo. I like the idea of it. I like the idea of kind of being able to, with your phone, do this, you know, split up a bill, let's say, and have a transaction. I can understand, though, where it could probably go a little, you know, far in that direction of like, really, you're going to come at me like 3 days later for that $5 drink that was whatever. But I think ultimately, probably an app like Venmo just enables what people would probably do more or less anyways, right? Like it's just a way to do it with technology. And maybe it seems a little bit different. They'd probably be that, if you want to call it cheap, they'd probably be that cheap in person.
Right.
If the app, you know, if the app didn't allow them to do it
somewhat anonymously, or at least facelessly, you know, and detached from this situation. So.
Yeah, that's what Carrie said when I talked to her. She was like, well, everyone's just commenting and my friends are just jerks. Which, I mean, that's true. Like, when you complain about, like, Facebook or Twitter or any of the things that, you know, people, it's really hard to hide who you really are with all of this technology.
Yeah.
And it also is a generational thing. Like, you know, in the beginning, when you're young and you really don't have money, you're really counting everything out.
Absolutely.
And now, like, when you get older, it's just like, I'd rather not. That's how I feel now. I'd rather not fight about the bill. Like, I'd rather just take care of it.
For sure. For sure. As I've grown older, you know, that $3, you know, thing that I paid for at the grocery store when I was there with my friend probably doesn't matter to me nearly as much now as it did when I was 20.
Right.
And every penny counted, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, times change.
Mm-hmm.
I like technology that enables this kind of stuff, though. So at its heart, I like Venmo. TNT's fan of the day is at Jens Keel on Twitter, who sent us this picture of a big home screen setup with one of my favorite guests, Selena Larson from the Daily Dot, from a few weeks back. Thank you for sending that in. We love getting these, and you know, we hope that you'll take some time the next time you're listening or watching to TNT to snap a picture of yourself, your setup, whatever you have. Just take a picture of it, or a video, or just, you know, I don't know, whatever you got. Post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. And we will find it. So you remember when Netflix said that they had no plans in getting involved in VR? Well, they probably still don't. But that didn't stop Netflix employees from creating a VR hub during the company's Hack Days event, where employees at the Hack Days event are encouraged to test out new ideas and new technologies. VR is kind of the thing right now. Here, what you get is a throwback to the era of VCRs in VR, with the company's vast library of originals served up in a virtual video store, kind of like Blockbuster, with VHS tapes lining the walls. You find an episode of Daredevil, let's say, you pull it off the wall, and then as you would do in Blockbuster, you throw the tape at the wall, and that transforms the store into a magical Netflix viewing room in the mountains, like you're in a country cabin in the mountains with like this ginormous TV screen in front of you watching your Netflix movie. And I want this. Netflix may not have plans to release this. They say many of the things that they do in these Hack Days don't necessarily, you know, aren't guaranteed to be released to the public. Maybe they get folded in at some point. Maybe they're just fun. But I think they should do this, because this looks actually, I think it shows a nice bit of sense of humor for the company, and it's better than what they have, you know, what their plans are, which is nothing. So do it.
Do you miss the VCR? Like,
do I miss the days of the VCR?
The Blockbuster?
You know, on a certain level, I do, actually. In the same way that I miss the record store experience. You know, like, everything is way more convenient now, and I don't know if I would go backwards. Don't get me wrong. But there was something about the experience of going, like, it's Friday night. I want to watch a movie that I don't have. So let's get in the car. Let's make an event of it. Like, there was something about, like, looking through the walls and looking for that one movie that you actually want to watch and realizing that all of them are gone except, oh, wait a minute, you check at the front counter. They have one under the counter. It made the fact that you got to view that movie a bit more special.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's interesting. I mean, because you think about all the people that, like, got their start in working in video stores, like Quentin Tarantino and stuff. Like,
totally.
What if we don't
exposed
have great filmmakers
this,
in the future because we don't, they have to do it in VR, I guess.
Now they just, those great filmmakers just have access to the world's knowledge, all of it at their fingertips. So now it's just a matter of finding it.
Exactly.
But yeah, I do miss kind of the experience a little bit, but I wouldn't go back. I also really enjoy going, I want to watch this movie. It just came out. There it is. Play.
Yeah.
That's really nice, too.
There is still a video store that you can go to.
I know. I've seen
Petaluma.
A couple.
Yeah. In Petaluma.
I've seen a couple
here.
Randomly, and I'm like, wow, how does, okay.
Yeah.
It's still
we
going?
Sometimes do go as a family. Yeah. We get DVDs, but yeah, I don't know. We like the experience of all being there together. And.
Wait a minute, you still go to the video store?
And, yeah, I forget what it's called,
movies.
But yeah, it's by the Raley's over there. And what's it? Silver Screen Video. Yeah, thank you.
So, there we go.
We do, yeah. And I have an account. I'll go get my card and show it to you.
Is your 10th rental free?
Yes.
Okay. See, there we go. It really does harken back to a time.
Yeah.
Man, now I feel like I need to do this with my family.
Right. If you guys still go to the video store, you should email us at tnt@twit.tv. Tell us about if you still go to the video store. We want to hear your stories.
And joining us tomorrow, we have one of my and another one of my favorite guests on this show, Lauren Hawkinson. It'll be great to have her back here. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always take part in the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv, or you can leave us a short voicemail like we had today. Thank you. 260-TNT-SHOW. And find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
You can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT and subscribe to the Twit newsletter at twit.tv/newsletter. And I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and Chris for running our prompter, and all the folks who help us produce the show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you tomorrow at the video store. Bye.